Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
And, of course, Mr. Chris Casso.
Hi.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Doing all right.
Doing okay. Having
We're
a great time.
Doing great here. Boy, fall has fallen. It's super dark now when I get to the stores, which is kind of off-putting. It's a
darkness has descended upon us.
It went from summer to early winter. Yeah. Just skipped fall. It's like, nah, I'm good.
We're supposed to maybe get some pretty bad snow.
I know. I keep hearing that.
It's supposed
threatening
to be
thing.
Early November that we get whammied with it.
Yeah. Really? Because that's like week after next.
That's right.
Well, it looks like already snowing off in the hinterlands.
Yep. Oh, anyway. So
stock
up
on your water, stock up on your food, because you do not want to be stuck at your local grocery store with all the other Niminals who are rushing around trying to get their supplies.
Hilarious how people just prepare for the worst.
They just go into panic mode.
And I say hilarious, I get annoyed, because last time we had a big snowfall, I actually coincided with when I was going to do my big grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, similar.
What are people doing here? I just want to buy groceries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But everybody's like buying up all the bottled water and stuff.
Yeah. I took pictures last year. It was empty shelves. It was like hurricane season in the South. It was really crazy.
I have actually started stocking up. Every time I go to the grocery store, I buy extra things that go
a little bit at a time. That's how you do it.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's extra cat food for the world's longest cat, so I don't get grief that way. I've got bottled water. I'm seriously,
just
I've got
do some city
water.
Prepping, you know? No big deal.
And you got to keep him fat just in case.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, what?
Nothing. What?
What?
So he's healthy, that's all.
Mister's going to be the one eating coal. That's
damn right. I will sacrifice myself to for my little fur person.
Okay.
It's not the other way around.
Speaking of stocking up, this is not a transition, but...
rotten transition.
But Renée Helga Myers hit the big time with Guts, and by the big time, I mean she's number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And this isn't for just graphic novels. This is for all books.
She beat Stephen King.
She beat Stephen King, and Dav Pilkey's Dog Man is number three, so it's just a...
But what is number two?
Points to the legitimacy of
Stephen King.
Graphic, The Institute King. From Stephen King. Of children's graphics novels.
Yeah.
Graphics novels.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she already was basically the queen, like, as of, like, the last book she did.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that in that time, we had Dogman 5 or 4 come out, whatever. One of them had 5, like, million copies printed.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Pilkey and Telgemeier are, like, in control of everything.
Pretty much.
And, yes, it's pretty nice. We got our copies of Guts, and they quickly disappeared, but that kind of coincides with we had a very successful quarter for raising money for educators. We actually raised about $9,000, and so they came in and they're starting to use that on all the Guts.
The Guts had a 1 million first printing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is looking like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
At the time.
Remember when it was a kid's comic desert? Like 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now it's beating everything.
And then Scholastic was just like, we see an opportunity.
That's right.
Strike.
It's a guy petting his cat
in a
nice big office chair.
Boom, Dark Horse, and IDW, as well as DC, all have kids' comics. Do those do nearly as well as the Scholastic stuff?
Yes. I mean, certain ones just do stronger than others. For like Oni, we're having really good success with the book Pailu and a few others that I push. Some of that's just like, like our little regional, like, get this.
Yeah.
Oni also does T-Dragon.
Yep.
And I've had some of that over at Corner, people wanting T-Dragon.
Yeah, T-Dragon's doing well. They're mm-hmm. successful. They've got games and everything going on.
Yep.
And then DC's finally really going into the YA books. Like, even just this past week, we got Superman Smashes the Klan, which is for everyone.
Is that a YA novel?
It's not YA. It's just for everyone.
Oh, okay.
So that one, I think, is going to have some longevity and some exposure once it really makes it into, like, the Scholastic book fairs and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, yes, hopefully this is going to be a strong continuing trend.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, speaking of Superman, it's come out that superhero readership is on the decline. Mm-hmm. Friend of the store, Rob Salkowitz, had an article in Forbes magazine drawing the connection between a decline in sales of superheroes versus the direct market and non-direct market, where books go, where graphic novels go to, like, Barnes & Noble and stuff like that, and, mm-hmm. and online and other books.
And Amazon.
And Amazon. So, like, the decline in the readership of superheroes is connected to the decline of people going to their local comic book store.
Yep.
Is that, you think that's a fair assumption to make?
I mean, it's a part of it. The comic book stores are slowly going extinct.
Yeah, so people maybe just be losing their stores and going online or going to other stores.
But also the popularity of superheroes in cinema doesn't equal the same thing. And those people don't necessarily want to read the books because a lot of the books have to move at a different pace and have nothing to do with the movie you just saw. Mm-hmm. Because by the time they might adapt something like, hey, we gave Shuri her own series and da-da-da-da-da, like we've moved on to something else so fast.
Right.
Like 50 new shows have been greenlighted by Netflix and Amazon. So it just doesn't hit the same wavelength, I feel. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
there's also so much more material out there outside of superheroes that comics provide, too, right? So that even if people are reading comics,
I wasn't really surprised to hear that superhero comics are on the decline, if that is or is not connected to the decline of comic book stores. But, like, when I'm in the bookstore, when I'm here at Comics Engine at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, I don't go to the superhero section. I'm generally over by Image and this part of the store I'm pointing to my right.
Yep,
the other part of the store.
Yep.
And not the superheroes that are in front of me.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with the superhero genre tapering off or even dying. And I think that the movies are the quickest nail in the coffin for the genre because that's a higher burnout, pop culture burnout process. The movies are going to be popular, but, you know, we've talked about it before, is the people who go to the movies are not going to be buying the comic books per se. There's going to be, and I'm sure you've seen this, and forgive me if we've already talked about it, but, you know, there's an initial hit of interest and people come in looking for comics, but then they discover that they are encountering a whole different culture. But also there's just like the white cisgendered male fanboy culture that is going away or is so discouraging to the process of telling stories. And it's battlements are so rigid that sometimes I'm kind of like, oh, you know, I'm not going to mourn the loss of superhero comics because comics as a medium have so much more potential for that. And we've seen that time and time again, but also superhero comic stories, you know, we all get frustrated because we want to see something fresh and new. And look at the struggles that we watch fans and creators go through to bring us something new that's going to sell. And it's just not a genre that I think supports itself. The infrastructure of the storytelling doesn't support itself. I could just be babbling a lot right now.
I'll just say
Chris,
that
you're making those faces.
If Marvel and DC were to just completely stop, we would go out of business within the week or two.
You would.
Because especially with this most recent two quarters here, Image has failed for us. They've not been able to introduce new books to maintain interest from the readership that was here for Saga and Monstrous and stuff like that. The only people that actually did sell for us this summer, and I mean, it's not good, but is the Marvel events and DC getting their game back together on Legion of Superheroes and doing some of these experimental Black Label things. I'm not saying that I prefer that the way to be, but all of our sales show that it is there, and that is why we are actually being able to maintain regular business right
now.
So,
yeah, Jonathan Hickman's Dawn of X.
X-Men have been a life-saving thing for us, you know? So.
But I guess what I should have clarified is that it goes in trends, and my worry is that the trends get to be thinner or paler and paler and thinner and thinner. Look at how over the years, over the generations, we've gotten so burnt out by crossovers.
Oh, yeah.
Crossovers used to be something that I would get excited about. Now I avoid them like the plague.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I gave up on the X-Men a long time ago, and I never thought I'd hear myself say that.
Mm-hmm.
I am really excited, clearly, by what Hickman has done with X-Men, but I'm sorry, guys. I'll be the first one to bail if these stories go south.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
I'm tired.
There's a lot of people who are nervous about it.
Yeah.
Who've been in the game long enough to know
yeah.
that it could they could get burned by it.
If I start smelling a story that I've that harkens to something I've read before, or you know, it doesn't feel original or authentic, I'm like, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I want to turn this into an X-Men discussion, but uh-oh. Hickman is on the book going forward. Is he going to leave the title at some point, and someone else is going to take it over?
I doubt that.
He's... Not for at least years.
Yeah, at least yeah. years.
At exactly. least years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not okay. in, there is yeah. no indefinite really? In yeah. comics. But he has shown longevity, seeing things all the way to the end.
Okay.
And a number of times, a number of titles at Marvel. So.
And he's finishing East of West, so yes. a lot of his commitments to his creator-owned projects are not going to be on the table.
Hmm.
And he's basically given the control because he is noted in the books as the head of X.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So he's the architect right now.
Right.
Yeah, that's a cushy job. And if Marvel is smart, they'll be like, let's keep funneling the money to that guy.
Yeah.
And let's just ride that gravy train until we can't.
Well, they don't even have to be smart. They just have to follow the money.
They just have to follow the money.
Which is what they do anyway.
Which is what they will do. So yeah. I feel like we've got at least 2 years for the Hickman train. Because he gave Fair Avengers enough. And Fantastic Four 4 years?
Something like that,
Something like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's a mutually beneficial relationship for everybody
Absolutely.
On that one.
Yep.
So,
yeah,
yeah. I agree with you, but nothing good lasts forever, ever,
oh, no,
especially
no.
in comics.
But hopefully within 2 to 4 years, some of the publishers will pick up in Dark Horse and Image and IDW will get some of their... The new cycle will happen.
Well, remember, maybe Joe guys, Hill's Westerns are going to come back.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget now, Westerns are going to come back, and I am betting my children's college fund on this.
Well, David Walker, we talked to him at the book club recently,
really?
And he's going to be working on a Western next year. So there you go.
Look, people.
There
look,
you go.
Look.
Proof. Anyway, you were going to say Joe Hill's Hill House. Stuff?
Yeah, Hill House has a chance to actually pick up steam and replace Vertigo for a while here.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe the horror trend will be the pickup because we talked about that in the previous podcast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, before we get the Western, we might have to take a detour to to Horrorland.
I'm fine with that.
Or Midland will be horror Western, and then we'll get into Western.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a metamorphosis.
It's perfect.
And I will take something back when I said I didn't like superhero comics. I do enjoy Sean Murphy's White Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Series,
oh, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's room because the thing is, there's a lot of the all ages kid superhero comics, and that will bring in young readers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there is always a place on the table for superheroes.
Yeah.
You just never want to give them complete control of the car.
Mm-hmm. Diversity. It's what my money guy always says. Diversity.
Yep.
Diversify your funds.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, speaking of new stuff, Jeff Smith's Bone is not new, but it has a new animated series coming from Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Bone is a favorite here in the store. How excited are we about seeing it live on screen?
Looking forward
to it. I'm actually
be
pretty excited because I think that... I think that it as an animated series, it's going to be a series, right? It's not going to be a standalone film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really
it's
long.
It's such a rich world that he created, that it will be fascinating, and I think that is the kind of story that will inspire people to come and buy the graphic novels.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because I don't think those graphic novels have ever been out of print.
No,
because Scholastic picked them up. They were just in constant rotation.
Never let
it was the
print.
First Scholastic book. Bone was
that's right.
Under the graphics novel imprint.
Yeah.
And I am always introducing them to younger people. Like I got my niece into them now, and she's just crazy about them.
To me, that one is
timeless.
All ages, you know. Like some people say, kids comics or whatever. But that one, I think, is
truly all
it
ages.
Just transcends age and time.
Yeah,
such a good story.
It's just good.
Totally.
This article that I'm reading from Hollywood
Rated
Reporter
good.
Says that Jeff Smith will be the showrunner. They don't use that language, but that's what they're calling him. He's gonna lead the show. It does not say if it's gonna be new stories or basically adaptations of old stories.
I figured they could start with the old start with the original story and then add little bits and pieces over time if they wanted to.
Yeah. The world is their oyster.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They will make much money off of it, so they will want to keep going.
Yes.
Which means we might get new action figures of the stupid rat creature.
Oh, the rat cat creatures. Remember when we got that big plushie of Bartleby? Yeah. Yeah. Is it Bartleby?
Bartleby.
Yeah, he's so
cute.
One
that was like the size of a watermelon.
It's King Doc. Huge. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, King Doc.
Yeah, nice. they made some normal ones, and they made a King Doc, who I can never make stand up straight.
No. Is he just like a big... Oh, well, because he's a big head. He's kind of like a big, like a
ratty,
tadpole or
ratty
something?
Ratty Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Is what
ratty
he is.
Pac-Man.
Yeah, it's just a big mouth with eyes that has fur on it, so... And hind legs.
Yes.
So there you go. Every once in a while when I hear about an imprint going belly up, I always go through our archives to see if we've talked about when they started, to see how long they've lasted, because we've been doing this show for 250 weeks.
What?
That's almost 5 years, friends. And so we've been doing this a long time, and when I did a search on our website, perfectboundpodcast.com, for Black Crown, I did not find where we talked about it starting, but I did find a book report where Cole shook his head when I said this. Cole hates Black Crown, but he did review one of their books. I didn't listen to it to see what you thought of the book.
Well, I never gave him a chance because I was so pissed off at their quote-unquote preview issue that I paid $5 for something.
That's right.
That was excerpt.
Oh, that's right.
You know, I was like, this is not a good way to introduce anybody to this, to your new publishing house. In fact, this, I felt really, and I was mad.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I personally killed Black Crown.
You did, because
I put the nail in that coffin. Black, is that what you're insinuating?
Black Crown has gone belly up. Black Crown is no more. Has shuffled off this mortal coil and joined the choir invisible. Anyway, yeah.
Join the Black Chorus.
Shelley Bond's Black Crown from IDW is going away. There was even one title that was canceled after just one issue.
That's
I feel
really
kind
sad.
Of bad for the creative team.
I remember
team
the cover
that.
Of that because I kept seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that a Versace book?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was announced in April 2017. They have a handful of stuff. And like comics, all the titles are still going to be around to be enjoyed for years and years. There's just not going to be anything new
through
from
that imprint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess what we've learned is that, sadly, the Vertigo model of these sort of outre storytelling, it just doesn't fit right now with what people want to be reading. And it's unfortunate because, you know, I am very fond of the majority of Vertigo titles from back in the 90s. And it's just not reaching people. That approach to storytelling is not reaching people right now.
A lot of the crowd that Vertigo caught during the late 80s, early 90s, they've just moved on. They're nowhere to be seen.
Right.
And that particular crowd that liked that mix of fantasy, horror, gothic material, just not really there.
Well, you know? I always characterize that audience as folks who'd aged out of superhero stories but still wanted to be reading comics, which is and that's why I equate Game and Sandman and Alan Moore's Swamp Thing being so successful, because it was more sophisticated storytelling, but it's still borrowed from the stuff that we grew up with. And I'm kind of wondering if those folks just went on and aged on all the way out of the genre altogether.
I mean, I think you see some people who I think just have a general love of comics, who that's where they started and they might continue. But I think it is mostly the trend that you guys are saying is, you know, either aging out or just it ended and they were done with it. And that's it. It wasn't like, well, okay, I read that story, I'm done. You know, it's not like, what's next?
Yeah.
Which, exactly. You know, there are some. I've had some of those people being like, I don't know what's good, and I'm like, let me show you. I can show you the world. Yeah, become a Disney prince.
Dolphin. A Disney dauphin.
A dauphin. Yes.
Maryland Manor was the title that got canceled after only one issue.
I do that all the time.
And it
a
sounds
non-binary
like...
print says.
I mean, I'm Aladdin, pretty much, because he's showing Jasmine the world.
It just sounds like there's a
girl.
There's like a shift happening right now where, you know, people aren't reading superheroes. Children's comics are kind of coming into their own. Imprints are failing faster than they can be, you know,
crafted.
Everything's happening faster now.
Yes. Yeah.
And so everything's condensing into this period of time and at that bulk rate, because like, okay, so Black Crown and Burger Books, same time, same creature, essentially. And it's just kind of like survival of the fittest.
Yes.
Like, I feel like Apocalypse, just like you are not able to survive.
It is now the Thunderdome of comics,
yes,
pretty much.
Yeah. Two companies enter, one, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
One eats the other. And that's what happens when we see that, like, whoever Oni and Lionforge merge or something.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah.
You know? Oniforge.
Oniforge. Yes. We need more of that.
Yes.
And finally today, this is an explain to Ben moment. We're going back to the X-Men because I never read X-Men, but there was a big thing that happened recently with the discovery of basically what was a blueprint for a house.
Because Hickman,
and now everybody's talking about the Jean, Logan, Scott triad, or as I like to call it, a thruple. What's the big deal here?
Not really. It's weird. This is like one of those Twitter big deals where I read the book and I'm like, whoop-de-doo.
It was Polygon did an article on it and had talked about how Jonathan Hickman likes to do a lot of subtle things that have like larger impacts. And within that context, they said that in this diagram of where people were living on Krakoa, I think.
On the moon.
On the moon.
The moon. They have different bases. And
that's right.
They call it the summer house.
That's
and
right.
It's basically Scott got to choose where he wanted to live.
Right.
And he wanted a view.
Right.
So, yeah.
So there's all these different rooms, and there are three rooms, and they're the only three that are joined.
Mm-hmm.
Like an ensuite kind of, or yeah. I don't know, whatever that is. Like in a hotel when you can go into the other person's room. And so someone at Polygon, I forget who wrote the article, just went off on saying how this is probably a mutual understanding of how to make relationships work kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then even going into, there was a point where the Sinister issue in one of the House of Powers had like the Sinister Gossip column. And they took the line out of there that seemed to be referring to both Cyclops, Jean and Wolverine, you know, start with like the best there is. I mean, obviously that's Wolverine and stuff. So it's just somebody seeing a diagram that Hickman did, knowing how Hickman works, and then extrapolating that out to polyamory.
So has there always been some sort of like thing between these three?
There's a love triangle.
There's always been a triangle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, Scott will be dead, so Jean's going to shack up with Wolverine.
So,
or sooner or later, Jean will be dead, and then Scott will shack up with Logan? I don't know.
Yes.
Sure.
Please. Yes. But here, I mean, it's
Emma Stone. Got some gal on the side.
Emma Stone?
Emma Stone.
Let's bring her in.
Sorry. Yeah. Who am I thinking of?
Emma Frost. No, the thing is, when they first mentioned it, I was just like, oh, is Scott getting Jean and Emma? And I was just like, good on you, Scott. And then it's like, oh, no. Oh, okay.
There was some mention of something that may, but again, it's rumor extrapolated out. And yeah.
So this was a manufactured sort of like.
It was
thing.
Rumor mill based off of knowing how the writer functions and putting
but
little
they're not
seeds
actually,
in there.
It's but not a story element.
It's not. It's one picture of a housing diagram.
Gotcha.
That's what this whole thing is based off of.
And then
people
just wanting to believe.
Well, yeah.
With all the revolutionizing of the X-Men stories that are happening right now, I wouldn't put it past them. That's
oh, no.
Yeah, bring alternative. Yeah.
The other fire to the fire, I don't know, gas to the fire, is that so there's
Stone.
Yes, the other episode is that there's a ruling government to all the mutants now. And there's like 12 people on the council, and one of them is Nightcrawler. And the day they were making the governing rules, they were like, we shall kill no man, we'll do something else.
And then we'll...
And Nightcrawler was just like, we need to make more mutants.
That's right.
Giggity, giggity, giggity.
That's right.
And so basically that's the other part of the extrapolation.
Yes.
Everybody's just like, Nightcrawler said, get doing it.
Yep. So what better
get
then?
Busy.
All right. Get down, America. Vote Nightcrawler.
That's right.
Move on to Book Report, everybody. And Nicole, let's
start
with you.
Oh my God, that couldn't have been perfect because my book is Money Shot and it's totally sexy.
There you go.
Now I have to pull it up. Pull it up.
That's what she said.
I know. I was trying to make it sexual, but I don't know. I don't have to because I'm going to talk about a smutty comic, which is totally on brand for me. Why doesn't it have a page that tells me all the people? I just have their last names right now. It's Seeley, which is Tim Seeley, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Beattie or Betty, B-E-A-T-T-I-E, Isaacs, Russell, and Crank.
Crank.
Which
I think that's just a name.
Crank is the name, yeah. So it's Money Shot, issue number one. It's a $3.99 comic. And it says, their mission, seek out new worlds, discover new life. And a bad word, it. F it. Mm-hmm. The cover has a bunch of people floating in space with cucumbers and panties stuff. And stuff. Look, if you're a child, just stop listening to this right now. So I think the premise will they have a little blurb in the beginning that pretty much tells you everything, and then I'll go into a little bit more about what I thought. It says, in 2027, an advanced alien civilization made contact, and the people of Earth discovered they were not alone. An offer to join the civilized universe was made. But then the aliens saw what a total crap show Earth was, engaged in hundreds of wars led by greedy politicians and fumbling to advance technologically. Humanity was deemed not worth the effort, and the offer was withdrawn. Unable to build spaceships capable of efficient interstellar travel and distracted by petty bickering and pop entertainment, humans eventually lost interest in the stars. Now, in 2032, amid an anti-science presidential administration and public apathy, scientists in an economically crippled America struggle to fund innovative projects. It starts off with pretty much the scientist making interstellar porn. With somebody who has appropriate anatomy in which to make porn. So the premise is that the scientists who all specialize in different things and want to be able to further their own personal research have decided, some begrudgingly, some like, yeah, I'll do it, have teamed up with this main physicist, Chris, who has made this like interstellar portal thing that allows them to space travel. And she found out that everybody was really bored, even with like porn. They were she went to go to her site that she really loved called cliterature.com. And she found out that it was like really weird. It was like an old guy in a tutu with like a Godzilla person in a Godzilla outfit with like a strap on. And everyone was just like, 2 out of 10 votes. This is boring. The Godzilla's boobs are small, too small, and like just weird things like that. And she's like, wait a second. If I can use this technology and I can make really interesting porn that nobody's ever seen, I may be able to get around the grant process and also just dealing with the administration and just all that bureaucracy that scientists have to deal with in the world. And so she talks everybody into it, and you know, they end up traveling. It's kind of like Black Scientist, if everybody wasn't like a completely terrible, unredeemable person, and having sex with aliens. Mm-hmm. So the art is absolutely delightful. It's not like super graphic or anything, but I mean, it is adult. There's boobies and stuff like that in it. And it's got a lot of great humor, and I love the art. It was just tons of fun to read. There's also a couple different covers. They're doing those like schmancy polybagged versions where it's, you know,
the hidden image
and stuff like that. And I was definitely swayed by Mirka and Dolfo, who I love, making a cover. Mm-hmm. For that series. But pretty much at this point, work is really stressful. I work a lot and I work really hard. So the thing that brings me the most joy is smutty things.
There you go.
And I think what I like so much about it is it's just a lot of the stuff that is coming out these days is really lighthearted and charming.
All the boys at the table just cringe.
No? You always cringe when I talk about this stuff.
We do.
Because I don't. No, he knows me.
That wasn't a cringe.
You're awfully pink one of right me. Now.
I wasn't cringing. I was laughing.
We're going to let you finish a thought here, Nicole.
Maybe.
Sorry.
I don't know.
Maybe.
So I just think that it's kind of like my funny pages, but it's my smutty pages, you know? Like, it's just, there's something about it that's charming. I'm a thirsty girl, and, you know, it's the Venn diagram of, like, the perfect thing. What am I doing here with my diagrams? I don't know. It just works really well. And this has been selling really well, too. It just came out this week of our recording, and I'm looking over at your wall, and you're pretty much sold out.
Yeah, like one copy.
So that always brings me a little bit of joy when, like, my weirdo things that I'm like, this is delightful, happen. So I got an advanced PDF. I read, like, a couple of the pages, and I was like, yes, order all of these things. This is so funny. It's throughout the whole comic, there's a point where they go to an alien world and they're hooking up with this fish, and there's a little tiny robot, a fish man. Mm-hmm. And there's a little tiny robot that helps with linguistics and stuff, trying to understand what they're saying. So
a
it's
babble
just
fish.
That's funny. And it's just like a fish guy being like, blurp, blurp. And like, you know, and then it's, and then she's like, come on and do things to me, fish guy. And then like, it's like translating to her and he's like, blurp, blurp, you know.
Blurp, blurp, blurp.
Blurp, blurp, you know, yeah. And then they find themselves in like a predicament, but then they're like, how can we turn this into an interesting sexual thing that we can stream? So it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I wish I had a little bit better beat on who the full artist name is, but I, for some reason I can't find it. But
we could add it to the show notes.
Yeah, the art it really makes it. It's really distinctive characters. Like you can tell everybody. There's no muddiness to it. There's great coloring as well. So it's just a stellar team throughout. Mm-hmm. It's Sarah. How would you say that? Betty?
I would say Beatty, but
Sarah Beatty.
That would be pretty funny
if it was
written
Sarah
by Tim
Beatty.
Seeley, co-scripter, like co-scripter, co-writer Sarah Beatty, artist.
Rebecca Isaacs worked on Buffy for a really long time.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
Oh, cool. The co-scripter is Sarah Beatty. Yeah. So Rebecca Isaacs is doing some awesome stuff, and Kurt Michael Russell is the colorist. Super phenomenal. It's just a really good team. And this is published by Vault Comics, so it's not Image, IDW, Dark Horse, any of that. It's coming out of the kind of...
But they have good production values.
Yeah, yep. And Vault Comics also does Heathen, which is a really great book, too. So they've got a lot of really good stuff coming out these days. I keep saying that, and it keeps making me go, hur, hur, hur.
I've also written a lot... I read a comic that was lettered by Crank. I can't remember which one it was,
but I'm like, a lot of lettering.
Crank, come on. You have an exclamation point at the end of your name. Okay, your letters are pretty good.
Yeah. In Japan, a lot of times when they have those names, it's usually a team of people.
Yeah.
You know, like Clamp was a team of people. Maybe as a couple different people working together. So
it's like a mini studio.
Yeah, kind of mini studio. Gosh. But I think this is just somebody being like, I'm Crank, you know, and it's like, okay.
Somebody probably called him Cranky at one point. Or she adopted it. Cool. Well, money shot. Thank you very much, Nicole. Chris Cassell, what do you got?
So I did a Kickstarter, which I have not been doing much of, but all of a sudden, like 4 months ago, I did like five of them at once. And this is a creator who's in the UK. Let's see, where are you from? Josh Hicks is a cartoonist from South Wales. And so it's written and drawn by Josh Hicks, and it's called The Glorious Wrestling Alliance, the premium special. And so I got no idea how anybody can get this, because when I did the Kickstarter, he said, like, this is like the only way you could get it right now. Maybe you could find it online as a digital comic. But it's basically a drama comedy following a cast of cranky wrestlers and their failing promotion as they just kind of go through life. Followed behind the scenes going ons at the universe's most glorious wrestling promotion as its motley roster of wrestlers, bookers, and hanger-ons navigate the pitfalls of life between the ropes. See them bicker, argue, weep, curl up into little balls on the floor. Happens at least twice. Bicker some more, throw things, throw each other. See it all. It's a comedy. And a braided teen for mild bad language, drug references, torsos, Inoue, and wrestling moves.
Inoue?
And Inoue. E-N-N-U-I.
Ennui.
Ennui. Sadness. And
sadness.
There's a really great page here that makes me think of Chris Ware, and as he kind of has a cutout where you can see all the characters all at once. And what I love is that there's like there's the two luchadores called Los Bros Hermanos, and then there's like Eric Pummel, legendary bunny. Eric Pummel's legendary puncher, and then there's the female division, and it has glass ceiling, Iron Fist, and that stars Miranda Fury, Joyce Carol Ouch, and Gertrude Steiner.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's just fun. The main character, if there is a main character, is the Great Carp, who is the champion, and he has a carp for a head, and they don't know. He might be an alien. They never talk about it. My favorite character is Death Machine, who's kind of like a big Grizzly Adams guy with kill tattooed on his forehead, and he's starting a book of poetry. And you're just following them as like their lives kind of suck, different levels of suck. There's Gravy Train, whose body is just an actual thing of gravy, and he's trying to make a breakout and figure out like what his deal is. So it's just divided into different chapters as they go on this quest to find their inner selves. And it's just silly and it's fun and it's subtle in its humor. So I really, I say it's subtle and it has a guy named Death Machine making poetry, if that tells you anything. Chapter to chapter, they have like these little meters for each character, which is their morale. And like, you know, half the time, like the Great Carp's morale is down unless he's like beating somebody up. And then there's one time where he sets their tour bus on fire and it says like morale completely restored, new skill, arson learned. And so, yeah,
it's such a hot fire.
Yeah, I loved it so much. So, yeah, if you can find it, maybe you can buy it directly from his website. Look for Josh Hicks' Glorious Wrestling Alliance. It did get voted. Pace Magazine said it was one of the top 25 comics of 2018. And I was like, I missed that.
Cool.
I'm just now getting it. Okay. Cool.
All right. Thank you, Chris. And finally, Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, speaking of X-Men, I read The New Mutants War Children, which is one of their many retro one-shots they've been doing as part of the 80 years project over at Marvel. And I had to pick this up because it was written by Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz, and it's all the original New Mutants characters from the 80s done in and Bill Sienkiewicz went is illustrating it in the style that he drew those comics in back in the day. And I guess I was feeling kind of forlorn from my youth, and I wanted to pick this up, and I was not disappointed. It actually borrows a lot of stuff from the stories that were told back in the 80s. It hinges around the character of Warlock, not Adam Warlock, but Warlock, the technorganic alien who ultimately pairs up with Doug Ramsey, Cypher, and they become Douglock at one point. But this is set somewhere in this ambiguous... Yeah, that's what they call themselves. Yeah. They were one being because Doug had died. And do you remember the stories? Or no? You're just laughing.
Sorry.
But there was a charm to this period of New Mutants stories that I kind of miss in comics as a rule. And Bill Sienkiewicz's heavy inks and really abstract imagery is something that we just don't see anymore. Back then he did a lot more with more mixed media as well when he was doing his illustrations, and it got totally out of control when he did, like, say, the Elektra miniseries with through Epic that Frank Miller wrote, and there was a Daredevil graphic novel where it just got so out of control that it got to be very, very difficult to read his stuff. This goes back to when he was a little bit more contained in his crazy illustrations. The story is, if I can remember correctly, it just kind of poaches ideas that were already dealt with and explored in the ongoing comic. They've managed to set the story when everybody, the whole family's together. You've got Danny Moonstar, you've got Ilyana, Rasputin Magic, you've got Rain Sinclair, Wolfsbane, and Cannonball, and Kitty Pryde, and Lockheed, and Doug, and Karma, and Magma, and all these, Roberto da Costa, Sunspot. I think half these characters are dead now. I remember correctly, but also I haven't been following X-Men.
But are they?
All alive again.
You know, it was $4.99, and this little trip back to my teenage years through the magic of comics was pretty fun, and I really enjoyed it. And you know what the lovely thing is that about this is that there is a lack of heavy text, because Chris Claremont was so good at writing novellas, and you know, and I'm sure that many of the artists who drew his stories were got really, really annoyed with having to work around all this heavy text. And he's actually did a lot of, maybe someone at Marvel edited him, or maybe he's been doing self-editing as a writer himself. But that was a really nice thing to see, is that I don't have to fight with the dialogue to see the art and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend it. Huh. New Mutants, War Children.
Right on. Thank you, Cole. Well, that is Book Report. That is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And our friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions come to us from Nicole. Lay it on us. Greetings from Mysterion.
I bring greetings from Mysterion. This week's quiz time is brought to you from the far out cosmos, where we delve into your knowledge of the Heralds of Galactus. It's like Mysterion knows me or something. The Devourer of Worlds has had over a dozen heralds over the eons. Today, Mysterion will quiz you about the most memorable. So this was given to me personally by Mysterion, and it is actually printed out. It is on paper.
Nice.
It's almost like a scroll given to me from like a raven familiar.
And your tonality you're adopting right now is really super creepy and Mysterion.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
I got my fog machine ready.
Keep doing it.
Let the quizzing begin. Number one, we all know that Norrenrad the Silver Surfer was the most famous of heralds. In the recent Dan Slott, Mike Allred, Silver Surfer series, the surfer was exploring the cosmos with his girlfriend from Earth, Dawn Greenwood. She gave a nickname to the Silver Surfer's board. What was it?
Was it Naughty?
Naughty. All
right.
That's my name. I feel like this was a question recently, no?
Oh, man, it's on the tip of my tongue, too. It's on the tip of my
tongue. Tip
board.
Of my tongue. That's the
word. Oh, no. Scooter?
No. The answer is Toomey. Don gave the board this name after hearing the surfer say, Toomey, my board.
Oh. Toomey.
The Great Mysterion highly recommends this delightful series.
Mm-hmm.
Number two. After the surfer gave up his role as a herald, who was next in line to take up the mantle of Herald of Galactus? Was it A, Nova, B, Airwalker, C, Firelord, or D, Terax the Tamer?
Oh, I just wanted to be some dude named Harold.
Firelord? I think it was Firelord.
It was Airwalker.
Oh.
A member of the Nova Corps, Gabriel Lan, captain of the Zedarian Exploration Vessel. Number three. Many years... Many years after Airwalker was no longer a herald, Thor suggested a herald to Galactus. Who was this powerful and nearly indestructible all-metal being?
Not the Destroyer.
Yes, it was the Destroyer. At Thor's urging, Galactus agreed to trade Fire Lord's freedom in exchange for the Asgardian Destroyer.
Hmm.
The Destroyer is actually a suit of mystic armor created by Odin to battle the incredibly powerful Celestials. The armor is constructed of a metal superior to
Uru.
I like Uru. The metal that comprises Thor's hammer and has been enchanted by Odin. Number four. Which of the heralds found the most worlds for Galactus, the Devourer, to devour? A, Silver Surfer, B, the Destroyer, C, Terax the Tamer, or D, the Dazzler?
Silver Surfer. It's because I wanted to be
Terax.
I'll say Terax because he doesn't care about life.
Yes, it is true. It is true. The answer is Terax the Tamer, a former dictator. And it's, you know, in his title. Mm. Terax was
The dick in dictator.
That's true. Right. He was a ruthless herald who had no problem leading Galactus to inhabited worlds. On several occasions, Terax annihilated large segments of the population himself using his cosmic powers.
Just for fun.
Yeah, you know. It's a weekend time. He once overthrew the ruling body of a small unnamed planet. He enslaved the entire population and set himself up as the planet's deity. It was during this time that the Dazzler became herald for a short time.
That was a thing? I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, everybody's been a herald.
I know.
It's like being the town bicycle.
Pretty much. Everyone's rode that board. I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. Toomey.
Toomey. Last question, number five. With all the various heralds over the years, who is now the current Herald of Galactus? Is it A, Praetor? B, Stardust? C, Red Shift? Or D, Morg, the Executioner?
Well, it was Stardust until Silver Surfer got back into it just now. So it depends when the quiz was first made.
A month ago? 2 months ago?
Okay, so it should be Surfer.
The answer is Prater. Formerly a Christian pastor from Oklahoma, Mike has become Prater, Herald of Galactus.
Huh. Hmm.
You question Mysterion?
Oh. Mysterion, well, we have a challenge.
It was at the end of one of the last stupid Ultron stories where basically Silver Surfer went up and said, like, I'll do it. Like, we got to go kill Ultron. So, and because the guy from Oklahoma happened like a while ago during the Straczynski run. So that's the only part that it doesn't line up mental time-wise for me. Mm. But whatever. Yeah.
Well, friends, if you want to settle this debate, email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Nicole. That is quiz time. And that is our show.
What are we doing?
Support your local comic book store, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.